Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style, coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia. This is PPTS, presented as a service to the progressive community by the Coffee Party USA Radio Network. PPTS highlights the activities, activists, and activism of the progressive movement. Join our host and special guests as we discuss the most interesting and important topics of the day. If you have a cause, an issue, a campaign, or candidacy that you're actively engaged with, please feel free to give us a call at 646-929-2495 and share with us your question or comment. Join the show's co-host and producer, Progressive Patty, in our lively chat. Go to the bottom of this episode page, sign into the chat room, and let us know what you are doing about it. All opinions are welcome. For the Coffee Party USA and Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, welcome to today's show. Please make welcome our host and friend, the Tennessee Progressive.
Well, howdy, neighbor. How you doing? It's nice to see you. Come on up. Sit on the porch a spell. Got some rocking chairs here. The wind's blowing slow. It's nice and warm here. Along the Mighty Duck River, where from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia, Tennessee, on this Sunday, April 27th, 2014, the last Sunday in April, I will be the Tennessee Progressive. You're welcome to call us. Give us a call at area code 646-929-2495, where for the next 2 hours I'll be taking your calls live. You can also join us in our very lively chat room, which you can find at the bottom of today's show page at blogtalkradio.com//. Coffee Party USA. We look forward to talking to you in our chat room. We look forward to your phone calls and letting us know what's on your mind. I will tell you that we have a couple of rules here that we closely follow. One is that you play nice. In other words, be respectful. Do your best not to present any profanity, because some of the people who hear our show are not necessarily of age. Keep it E for everybody. And we'll be with you. We're going to have about a 2-hour, 15-minute show today, and we're going to talk about the fifth battlefield in the war on Is it the war on women? Is it the war on poverty? Is it the war on rights? It's getting a little bit hard to tell because the characters are changing. And it's a little bit difficult to kind of know where you're at, which is why I have chosen this particular battlefield. And we've identified four battlefields in the war on the poor, which is what generally this subject matter is about. And today, I want to do what some people would find discomforting, which would mean that it's kind of a mental disconnect, a mental dissonance. You're not going to like it. You probably won't appreciate the grandeur of my intellect, but we're going to do it anyway. So once I've told you howdy, I've told you pretty much all I know. Everything else is nothing more than my opinion. So I want you to get out a scrap of paper and a pencil, and I want you to think about some things, and I want you to be prepared to call me, and if you think I should be, call me out on some things. It's going to be a bit of a rough show, so hang on, sports fans. I am a member, and this show is presented by the Coffee Party USA. And if you should be lucky enough to visit our website, you will find that one of the things that we hold in the highest possible regard is civility. Members of the Coffee Party, who are full members of the Coffee Party, are asked to sign what is called a civility pledge. Now, I don't really feel the overwhelming need to try and explain what that is to anybody. If you need to know, you can go to the website address of the Coffee Party, which is http://www.coffeepartyusa.com. Remember, this is the .com. And if you go to the very first tab and where it says read about us, you can see our civility pledge. And that civility pledge is really simple. It says, as a member or supporter of the Coffee Party, I pledge to conduct myself in a way that is civil, honest, and respectful toward people with whom I disagree. I value people from different cultures. I value people with different ideas, and I value and cherish the democratic process. So if that's not too big a leap for you to make, come on in and join us. Okay? In today's discussion, we're going to talk about reason. We're going to talk about the poor. And why it is that there is a battle for reason in the war on the poor. And I can tell you, of course, that we've seen some really excellent examples of this very conundrum in the past week's news, which makes it a timely topic. I was trying to figure out how we're going to discuss all the stuff that's going on in this past week with, you know, along with everybody else, the Clive and Bundy story and some of the stuff that's coming from the mouths of some of those who would be nominated to the Congress of the United States or down ballot to the state representatives and their interesting conundrums going on. And I'm not talking about the reasons for something. I'm talking about the ability to reason. Okay? I want to make that distinction very clear. Everybody has reasons. But does everybody reason? Do you consider and think out and come to grips with what other people are saying, listen to the opinions of those around you, inform your own opinion, and come to a point where what you believe is what you're willing to stand for? Now, I will tell you that in my rather august history of 2 years and more on this show, I've come to find out that when people discuss their differences, one of the very first things we discover is that about 90% of whatever their opinions are, we can agree upon. It's the 10%. That has uniformly been the case since we began this show. When people were willing to tell us what they thought about something, then they could come and tell us. Now, on this show, your opinion matters. I'm not going to argue with you, try to change your opinion so much unless it's blatantly false and you're not using your own brain. If you want to use your own brain and come in here and talk about things that matter to you anywhere across the country, that's fine with me. We have people from all over the world listening to this show. This show is broadcast live. It's rebroadcast on two networks. It's archived for your eternal use wherever you may like to find it. You can download it from the web, from our webpage here. You can download it from iTunes. It's available. We're not going all over the net looking every possible outlet. If you want to know our show, you know that we're here. okay? Come here. And if you can't find what you need, we'll tell you where to find it. Because that's just how great we are. One of the things that I have been blessed to come to know since moving, we moved Progressive Politics Tennessee Style over to the blog or the Coffee Party radio show network some weeks ago. And in that time, I have found some of the most pleasant, honorable, respectful, civil people that it's ever been my pleasure to associate myself with. That's one of the reasons I thought this team would do well with the Coffee Party, because on our teams here, we have people who are honest, respectful, vigilant, and they do their work extremely well. And our team is dedicated to the purpose of presenting the truth as we know it. Now, there are occasional times when we slip up and we're ready to apologize for that and to correct ourselves wherever we may find the need to. This show has an official blog, and I have a personal blog. And when the show makes a mistake, the show apologizes for it. If I make a mistake, I apologize for it. My views are my views and not necessarily the views of the Coffee Party USA, Netroots Radio, American Media West, or any other place. The show is my responsibility, and I take full responsibility for everything that happens or doesn't happen on this show. To me, that's what a reasoned person would do. You cannot know me. You cannot tell by simply listening to me some of the things that inform my opinion, because our show is so short that I don't have an opportunity to really flesh that out sometimes. And so because people have asked, you know, they say you bring people on your show and they have their opinion, and I love to hear their opinion. Sometimes I like to fight with their opinion, but what's your opinion? Well, I feel like my opinion is the one which matters least on this show, because the purpose of the show is to get your opinion. And I'm occasionally fairly reasonably caught up on what's going on. Sometimes I actually get it right, so don't expect mastery here. I'm not holding myself to that level, and I'm not going to hold you to that level. I do, however, make an honest attempt with every word I say to understand the truth of it. Reasoned truth is a very secret weapon. Reasoned truth is a very powerful weapon. In fact, it is one of the most powerful weapons on the planet. Every human on the planet, and not necessarily limited to our species, but while we're talking specifically about our species, I would tell you that every human being has the potential to have reasoned discourse based on truth. Now, one of the things that we say around here all the time is that speaking truth to power creates change. Speaking truth to power creates change. So as we begin to kind of go just a little bit below the surface and unpack some of the things that we believe in the Coffee Party and we're looking at as citizens around the United States, there are two things I want you to understand. First of all, truth impresses me. If you want to impress me, bring me truth. Your opinion is not truth. Your opinion is your opinion. Your opinion, like mine, is worth what you pay for it. However, when we come together and share our various and sundry opinions on subject X, sometimes people who have been holding opinions that are not valid can, on their own, for themselves, without any assistance from you or I, come to a new understanding that is closer to the truth of a matter. That's the goal of this show. We just want to do it with civility and respect. In fact, we require it. Now, is it possible that there are people who cannot reason? Well, of course there are people who cannot reason. There are people with mental, physical limitations which make it actually impossible for them to reason past a certain point. Now, that doesn't mean that those who do not qualify to be in that category automatically do reason, or even that they can reason, because there are some things in reasoning that generally are best used after they've been taught. For instance, rhetoric. You can look it up. There's some wonderful free courses on the internet that will provide you with a very brief, easy, well-displaced understanding of the basics of rhetoric. So if you would like to impress me, honor the rules of rhetoric in your discourse. Write that down. Honor the rules of rhetoric in your discourse. That will tell me that you have at least done enough work to have a place at the table. One of the things that happens is when you really understand some of these 13 rules that are basically the basic rules of rhetoric, it's not your opinion which changes, it's your presentation of your opinion. You take ownership for what you believe. You don't lay it off on some ignoble out there spatial distance thing that's dumb. I'm not trying to make a more intelligent audience here. I'm trying to make a more reasoned discourse. Reasoned discourse. We're graduating now to the early high school years because we're in a situation that requires us to do so. Reasoned discourse gives opportunities for those of opposing views equal legitimacy. I need to understand your opposing view. If you present it to me with reasoned discourse, there's about a 99% chance that I will at least understand where you're coming from. The jewel of this is if you follow the basic rules of rhetoric and you create, take some time to write down or think out what it is that you feel about fill in the blank, one of the things you may well discover is that's not really what you think at all. It's just what you've been told. Or it's what you've read from a source that you may consider to be reasonable. The war on the poor depends almost entirely upon your inability to reason. Because where reason exists, a lot of the, if you will, and I don't see rhetoric as being a bad term, by the way. I taught it for a long time. I kind of like it. I wish a lot of more people would use it, which is why we're talking about it now. It's a tool for reason. So you can go to a lot of places and get from definitions in Wikipedia to courses on Coursera or edX that are free that you can involve yourself in to help you begin to argue, which is a good term. It's argument is not in its nature by itself a bad thing, okay? Argument is a good thing because what we're doing, you know, discourse today is what argument used to be. It's the same thing. People coming together with the expectation through civility and respect that each side will be heard. It's not that one side will automatically be compelled to get down on their knee like a guy bending your wrist back in an alley, say, I give uncle. I don't want you to give. I don't want you to be complacent. I don't want you to be submissive. I want you to be convinced. A lot of what we do here will not happen to the point of conviction. It's not supposed to. That's not what we're about here. What we're about is reasoned discourse. And we're moving the goalposts a little bit in the show, and I understand that. I've been thinking about it all week and trying to figure out a way to make it work. And I think this is the way that we'll make it work. Let's talk about reason. And let's talk about the war on reason. Regardless of your political stripe, you have heard things, read things, seen things, which seem not to make sense to you. Bad reason, bad rhetoric, a lack of rhetoric, a lack of reasoning can lead good points to go awry. And they can make even potentially great argument so weak as to be impotent. When you speak truth to power, things change. The question is, do you know what the truth is, and do you have the ability to find it? Well, the war on the poor is in large measure wanting very badly for the answer to that to be no. They want you to talk about the two-word phrase that you get the 13-second soundbite on because freedom. Problems with progressives, and there are many. I am their king. The problem children, that is, not progressives, is that we believe that the net result of what our reasoned argument informs us of, sorry, Mrs. Kirby, should lead us forward in action. And if that is an endpoint whereby you move from the observer to the participant, let it be by reasoned argument. Now, if somebody says the sky is green, you need to know that there are a large number of people in this country who will accept it simply because you or someone else says it. And that's tragic. It is false because it appears to be an ignorance. And it's not. It's something else. It's a very bad use of one of the articles or more of the basic rules, 13 basic rules, 14 if you count ad hominem, of rhetoric. Okay? And I'm not going to teach you rhetoric on this show. I'm not going to do it. You have to come prepared. And that's the second rule of the show. The first one is be nice, play nice. We've always said that. The second one is come prepared. Well, a lot of people have written me and said, well, what exactly does that mean? I'm grateful for those people because I know they're listening, but they want to know how to extend their participation, and I think that's awesome. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you, when you come prepared, you have reasoned, well-reasoned, I might add, correctly reasoned, arguments. Now, if what I hear, in your opinion, is a boilerplate of someone else's statement, I will call you out on it effective from this day forward. We have brought the basics. Now we're going into the deeper woods. We're going below the surface a little bit because I want to talk to you always as citizen. But I'm not going to bring to bear on this show my political beliefs, my personal beliefs, my religious beliefs, my social beliefs, my economic beliefs, my financial beliefs, anything, my spiritual beliefs. I'm not going to do it. I reserve those unto myself. But you need to know that a lot of what happens on this show informs my opinions, especially when I have rhetorically sound, logical, reasoned argument in front of me. I love it. I love it. So, having said that, we're talking about something very, very important. And I want to bring you a few examples of that so that you might understand what this show expects and what I believe citizenship expects from you. Now, for those of you who are not citizens of the United States, I would really like it if you would tell me that, because that opens up a whole new area for me to learn. If you're from, say, Czechoslovakia or Yugoslavia or Serbia or Croatia or Ukraine or Crimea or Japan or China or Australia, any continent, doesn't matter. Venezuela, let's go. Canada, sure, why not? Wherever you live and you can hear this show, you're entitled to come here and talk with us at 646-929-2495. And we're on the air from 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, USA. The show is available via archive. It's replayed Tuesdays beginning at midnight Eastern Time, 11 o'clock Central Time, USA, over at netrootsradio.com. And we try to work very hard to bring other views into the conversation. That's one of the things that really attracts me to the coffee party. But it does require something of me that other positions don't. You know, if I go to a decidedly one side or the other blog, and I write on one of them all the time, I know how that is. You're preaching to the choir. My goal is not to preach only to the choir. My goal is to give a message to those in the choir to go out and preach to their neighbors. You know, if I can give them reasonable argument, well-reasoned argument, I believe that I can overcome at least half of what I hear. That's pretty good. If you call into the show, please identify yourself. And if you have a question or a comment, let our staff know what that question or comment is. It's not a screening. We just want to be a little bit aware so that we can talk intelligently to you about what it is you want to discuss. And that's fine. As I say, you know, be prepared. We are. And if your comment has to do with, reducing the voting age to 16, what I'll do is I will dig deep in my research, either before you speak or as you speak, and I will see if there's anything that I have come up with on a filing card that is relevant to that issue. It may be a link. It may be a discussion ongoing somewhere else. It may be what I think about it. So far, it could be anything. Okay? I need to be prepared to not entertain you, because this isn't an entertainment show. Hopefully, it's an information and action show. But I want to be aware of, like any good speaker, the points I wish to make, or write down the points you wish to make so that we might discuss it. That's how this show works. But, okay, we're talking about the war on reason, okay? I want to create a couple of examples with you. And then I want to take a couple out of current day news so that you might better understand what it is I'm talking about and what it is you're dealing with on a daily basis. I'm going to start with a theory. And the theory is, it is cheaper to create a fallacy than it is to overcome one. I'll say that again. It is cheaper to create a fallacy than it is to overcome one. That doesn't mean that it is right, that it is logical, that it is rhetorically sound, or that it is the truth. But I want you to remember this. I want to drill it in. It is cheaper to create a fallacy than it is to overcome one. For instance, all people with blue eyes have a lower intelligence quotient than people with green eyes. Now, while you may immediately knee-jerk respond to that statement, I don't want you to. It's a ridiculous, it's called reductio, never mind. It's called the reduction to the ridiculous, okay? That is a logical fallacy. It's also a rhetorical fallacy, which means it's not true. Now, the reason it's not true is because it cannot be proven, nor can it be disproven, which is the second rule you should write down. You hear it said all the time, but you probably know people who don't understand what it means if you do, which is your fault. You should be telling them. You cannot disprove a negative. You cannot prove a negative. So if what you're trying to do is to create a fallacy, one of the best places, the most fertile grounds to spawn that fallacy is in the world of the negative. They don't do this. It won't do this. I didn't do this. It's an automatic safe ground for the fallacy, but it has nothing to do with the valid argument. It has nothing to do with the validity of a position. It has nothing to do with the sincerity of a conviction. Because all you have to do is start with something which cannot be proven or disproven. And generally comes from the negative, which is not a bad place in its own right, because every positive needs a negative. A proposition needs an opposition. But if you speak truth to power, things change. If what you're speaking to power is a negative, no change happens. So if you've been, you know, beside yourself for weeks and months and years trying to get people to understand the very simple truth that whatever you wish to insert, the first thing you should look at is it logically positive? Is it rhetorically sound? Is it a reasoned argument? All blue-eyed people have a lower intelligence quotient than green-eyed people. What's the problem with that? Okay, let's presume for a moment that it jumps out at you and you automatically see it and all that. The question is, can you positively refute it? Which means not to say I disbelieve it. I think it's negative. The question is, can you overcome it with truth? In fact, there, you know, are numerous studies out there that say without a doubt that green-eyed people have superior intelligent quotient to blue-eyed people worldwide. It's not enough to say that and then follow it with, do your own research, Google it. It's another negative right there. I don't have to defend the position I present. You have to refute it. No, I don't. The third rule. I promise. It's almost done with rules, but I hope you're writing them down. The third rule. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Now, this is on both positive and negative side of reasoned argument. okay? If you say something positive that is extraordinary, like, my God, don't you know that blue people are, you know, more people have ruled the world that have been blue-eyed people than green-eyed people? Everybody knows that. It's a different type of fallacy, but go with it for a minute. The presenter has the burden. When you see a comment that says, I don't have to tell you why, you have to tell me why I'm wrong, while it may be a good opportunity to engage someone with the truth, it's not a requirement. Okay, if I say that the moon landing by Apollo never happened, for instance, it is not your responsibility to prove to me that I'm wrong until I can prove to you why I'm right. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence or extraordinary proof. This is actually an escalation into a more advanced type of reasoned argument that I don't really want to go to, but you need to write that rule down because it's a gateway to a couple of other rules that we'll talk about on our next show. We don't have to get beyond the basics here for most of the stuff we're going to talk about. It's reasoned argument that begins to define conviction. Rumor, aspersions, you know, denying somebody the right to speak simply because of who they are or the position that they hold, which can be a fallacy in its own right, because I am the president of the Grand Poobah of Uppity-Up, then what I say goes. Well, not necessarily. Because, you know, if you got a belly button, you got 50% chance of being absolutely incorrect. The skeptics were one of the largest citizen groups in both the Roman and the Greek city-state. And that term has been bent and knotted into a twisted pretzel. Skepticism is not a bad thing. Skepticism is an inquiry. Skepticism says, I need sufficient proof. People sometimes take that to an untoward bent when they say, until you satisfy my skepticism, I think you're wrong. Well, what that's saying is there's nothing you can do to make me believe you're correct or that you're right or that I will agree with you. And there are some people you should pass on by, say, thanks, have a great day. And not, now in the political world, this is known as voter identification. Candidates learn, or should learn, I say, most of them don't, the ideas of basic rhetorical speech, speech writing, speech making, argument, that sort of stuff. Of course, there are professions built around it, ministry, politics, education, healthcare to some degree. But reasoned argument holds in all of these areas. Now about these blue and brown people. You know, I'm not prejudiced against anybody, but I hate them damn blue people. Is that a defensible argument? If so, why so? If not, why not? 646-929-2495. The truth needs to be incontrovertible, which means that it cannot be undone. It means that it must be, at least in the instance to which it is applied, absolute. Now, that doesn't mean that your opinion is ground in stone and covered in steel. If you have an opinion, what you're saying by the use of the word, my opinion, is that it is an unfinished ordeal. You're somewhere on the journey between ignorance and reasoned argument. You're building your proof. You're looking at the consequences of your proof that may take you somewhere else. You're trying to establish similar examples that will make other people agree with you. But not them damn blue people. I mean, everybody knows them blue people just can't be trusted. Why is there a war on the poor? And why must there be, in that war, a battle for reason? Well, if you listen to the television, now I'm afraid to tell you this, but I'm going to, because I don't want to necessarily hurt anybody. But one of the best ways to learn the truth of my statements is to watch Fox News. You can get a two-word soundbite that goes from 6 a.m. to midnight on Fox News via memo as to what today's talking point is going to be about said issue. It's usually the hottest topic of the day. It's usually the shortest phrase of the day. And it's left to those presenters and anchors and things like that who would bring their spin in the early hours, of course. You know, that's where the rookies are. And in the midday is really not that important. It's the prime time that those guys have to really come up with the good stuff. And you've got the Sean Hannitys and the Bill O'Reillys and, you know, people of that ilk who in their entertainment networks do events will tell you, you know, it's not news. Although they're talking about the topic that is the hottest news item of the day and they're bringing on people to argue either for or against the position of the Supreme Court or an action of the Congress or of the administration or of the judicial branch or of a national political party or of a state party or of something going on in a state legislature or world events or something, depending on what their particular view is that day that they think you should care most about. They'll bring it out, and they'll do that same two-word soundbite. We'll get 52 different representations across the course of a 24-hour news cycle until the memo comes down as to what the next new hot thing is for tomorrow. Now, the two words are probably in their nature innocuous. Tax cuts. Budget deals. Committee negotiations. Because this is a politically oriented show, I tend to use politically oriented stuff. Okay? You can apply this to anything. Why did you kick the puppy? You ask your five-year-old. Because, okay, that a sufficient answer? That a reasoned argument? Some would say no and discipline their child right on the spot. Some would kneel down to the eyeball level of their child and say, because why? What was it that made you think it was a good thing to do to kick the puppy? Now, there's a dangerous side effect here. The first is that you would believe that a five-year-old cannot reason. It's not true. Scientists have definitively proven that children as young as 18 months old can develop reasoned argument. It may not be complex, but they can do it. And that's one of the reasons you as a parent of a four-year-old can be pulling your hair out. I didn't beat my own kid at argument. Happens all the time, and you know it does. If you have a story like that, call us and tell us, 646-929-2495. Enter into our chat room and give us a shout. Just say hi. Let us know you're here. Around, sixth grade, maybe, used to be, you can become involved in what's called speech or debate. Or oration or you know, stuff like that. And then all the high schools have speech league or debate league or forensic league or any of that sort of stuff. Because one of the things that forensics in English does is that it breaks down, tears apart, and looks at objects of argument. It's most often done after the argument has been given, therefore it is called forensic speech. Which means that it tends to look at speeches made in the past. But if you can find three fallacies within a speech made from the past that inform you, you may avoid them in your next speech, which is what the better part of it is. Public speaking has to do with that. Corporate presentations have to do with that. Everybody has to present a speech to somebody during every day. It's a simple fact. Unless you cannot speak, in which case you have to learn to sign. And then some of your reasoned arguments can be really powerful. So how do you take this notion that speaking truth to power creates change and do something with it? I can't do that. It's one of the most common things I've ever heard in my life. I can't do that. When you say, I can't do that, you've got two statements. One of them's true, one of them's false. The first statement is, I can't. The next statement is, do that. There are what are called negation words, unfortunately, that are somehow pre-wired into the human brain. They are can't, don't, and try. You might want to write those words down. Can't, cannot, don't, do not, and try, attempt. We'll be talking about those a lot shortly. What the brain does with those words is called negation. And when the brain interprets or hears those words, it automatically cancels them out and does whatever follows it. Now, you need to understand this. Because this is a reality that some people understand and other people do not, which is why sometimes people do things against their own self-interest because of the rhetoric that they're listening to. Because their argument comes from when people say they don't do this, your brain doesn't hear that. Your brain hears they do this. And you start arguing with yourself, which is exactly what is intended, because as long as you're arguing with yourself, you cannot speak truth to power. It's one of the values, negative values anyway, of trying to prove a negative. That's what you just started to do. You just started to try and prove a negative. They don't do that. What your brain hears is they do that. But you read it in the paper that says they don't do that. The power of words is extreme. And, of course, the largest and strongest muscle in the human body is the human tongue. So we sort of get, like, locked in here. The war on the poor highlights the necessity for reasoned argument because there is so much absent in it. Talked about things like, you know, the war on education, the war on women, the war on civil rights. And now we're talking about the war on reason. Well, I want to be able to help prepare you for that battle because it's necessary that you be out there doing it right now. Which is why of all the things we could talk about of this show, whatever the hot topic is, the one thing I found that we can spread across all of it is the idea that reason debate creates truth. Truth spoken to power creates change. And we need change right now in this country. There are any number of perspectives on any given issue which deserve to have a place at the table. We've talked to people from all stripes politically and ideologically on this show, and will continue to do so. They bring us information that we need to know. They bring us corrections to the fallacies that we have come to believe. They bring us the opportunity to become engaged where we live. They've given us an opportunity to refute the next person who stands in our face and dares to tell us purposeful lies. When you speak truth to power, change happens. Things change. That's also true when you speak to your neighbor. There's some pretty mighty passionate people out there who are really hot riding on the rails for something that's just patently false. And they absolutely believe it. And they believe it because of where they heard it. They because of who wrote it, who said it. And are they ever shocked when they find out that the person they revere is merely mortal and has a belly button and can mess it up? And often does. One of the reasons that it comes into play is because of the absolute excess of this unprovable negation that is going on our airwaves and in our newspapers and our media today, even online and where I live on the internet. And I've been conducting a 6-month experiment where I would go to places I wouldn't normally roam and just drop a little truth and see what happens. It's been amazing. I'm known as a thread killer because when I make a comment, it tends to stop the thread. The reason for that is because what I've dropped is a little negative truth in the middle of a pack of lies. And when the subject of the comment thread is itself a lie, it's not an opinion, it's not, you know, my feeling on this right now, or it's a fact. One of them was that an entirely total number of 6 people signed up for the Affordable Care Act before the deadline passed. Okay? I was kind of aware of this because I was very carefully watching that entire process from the first day of the rollout to the close of the events on March 31st. Or March 30th, I guess. Whichever one it is. And all of a sudden this popped up, and it started, and it went wild. Only 6 people have signed up. And then that was kind of easy. And then it became 600,000. That became kind of easy. But they gave us 599,994. Then it became only 6 million had signed up. This was the moving goalpost. This is the definition of a moving goalpost. The original poster, OP, made the statement that only 6 people had signed up for the Affordable Care Act. This was on, like, March 29th. I didn't say a word. I provided a link. I love doing that because I don't get stuck with having to defend against an opposition force an opinion that they don't hold to be valid. What I presented them was the truth. Now, there are lots of different ways of doing that. You know, I could say, yes, you're absolutely right. Here's proof. Of course, they'll go glomming for that real quick because they know it's a lie. And all of a sudden, They've got an incontrovertible authority source that says, in fact, 7.5 million have signed up, at least this far. What they have to do is they have to stop that argument in its place. That doesn't mean that they're not going to come back with a different argument, as was the case that I just examined and explained. Then they came back at 600. Then they came back at 600,000. Then they came back at 6 million. They're cooking the books. That's the point. They're cooking the books. Who is? Who is it that's cooking the books? Is the Congressional Budget? Is it the Congressional Budget Office? The General Accounting Office? The National Council of Insurance Commissioners? Who is it that you think's cooking the books? Well, let's see what they got to say. Well, who goes to that problem? Look, they said it. I believe it. That's the end of it. Oh, okay. Well, here's a link. Next. Because what happens at that point is that the comments stop. Or they stop on that subject and they try to veer it. They being the opposition, I'm always I or me, and they're always them. So them are the non-truth tellers. This is not party specific. Every party does it. It's your responsibility, if you engage that party in any way, to know what the truth is and to call it as you see it when it's apparent. Not one piece of truth leads to all truth. Some truth is very limited. When they say only six people signed up for the Affordable Care Act, you know that's a fallacy. The question is, can you prove it? Well, if you come back with truth, it proves itself. That's the first thing. It's easy that way. It's also a practiced exercise that you get better at the more you do it. There's a lot of mistruth in journalism. There's a lot of mistruth in the media. There's a lot of mistruth on the internet. Can you find it? Well, no, you don't have to. It'll come to you, usually. From the Nigerian general with an idea for your bank account to there were six people signed up for the Affordable Care Act, or as they like to call it, Obamacare. They very quickly found out that was a negative they didn't need. So, after attempting to repeal it 49 times, and of course there's plenty of attempts still yet on the table, they decided they were going to kill it by, they were going to produce death by committee. And then when the witnesses that they chose to call, the ones they wanted to hound into non-existence, that is, like, for instance, former Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, they didn't ask for the truth. They didn't want the truth. They wanted something else. And they didn't get it. The reason they didn't get it was because the truth is generally the power in the structure. It's you can overcome truth with lies. That's a given. You can do that. But there comes a point at which your truth just isn't. And that's the purpose of reasoned debate. It's not to be right. However, being right doesn't hurt. It is to understand where your fellow citizen is coming from on an issue. You may live in Minnesota, they may live in Arkansas, and there's just a world of difference between the reality in Minnesota and the reality in Arkansas. Their reality may be different, but if it's the truth should survive there as well. Sometimes it doesn't. In fact, one of the primary functions of spinners, they're called, spokesmen for the truth, as they see it, is they are tasked with the requirement to get you to believe something that they believe is the truth, which in fact is not. Their spin, their truth. There's no such thing as their truth. There's the truth. Whenever we can find the truth, and we can speak the truth to power, things change. And we've seen this time and time again. I'll give an example. 49, 50 plus attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act have failed. Why? This is the danger of propounding a lie. You know, President Obama cost me my insurance. President Obama didn't cost you anything. The Affordable Care Act cost me my insurance, possibly. Why is that? Well, I don't know. You ought to start with your insurance company because they're the ones that canceled you. Maybe you didn't pay your premiums on time. We found that happens a lot. Maybe you just started with a new insurance plan and your first payment isn't even due yet. I don't know. Maybe the truth is that the insurance you purchased wasn't insurance at all. And your insurance carrier knew it. And suddenly came this Affordable Care Act thing where they have to prove that what you're getting is in fact insurance with a minimum coverage, whether it be life insurance or health insurance. And what the insurance company has been selling you and what you've been paying for somewhere from a month to several years doesn't insure you for anything, much less that which it implies it will cover. Because then you go to the actuarial data and you find out that of those people who were hospitalized for, I don't know, appendicitis or tonsillectomies or gallstone removal or, you know, some illness or injury, broke your leg. When they file with your insurance company denies the claim every single time. Now, you've been making payments to them for years. They've been accepting your payments for years. But the coverage that they state is not the coverage you get. It's called underwriting at the time of claim. It's a nefarious and felonious act that creates problems for entire groups of insurances when they have to then defend or prove the insurance portion of the policy. And insurance is only a portion of every policy. And they may have not only illegal policy ramifications, but they may even have illegal premium ramifications. That says they don't owe you any premium return or they don't owe you anything at all if they deny your claim, as they will 100% of the time when you're inside a medical facility or a hospital. And all of a sudden, a boatload of insurance companies got in trouble and they had to cancel entire groups. Classes are called policies. Now, one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that that happened was because they were selling what is referred to in the insurance industry, an industry that pretty much knows about insurance, and one that I tend to respect. The insurance industry said of its own policies, that's junk. We've had a great ride with junk insurance. We've made nothing but profit because we've never paid a claim on these policies, ever. There's statistical data available to anyone, especially if you are an insured with a given company. And you can request the annual report from any insurance company provider in America, actually in the world. They may ask you to pay for it because some of those are high-cost, many hundreds of pages documents, which is one of the reasons they charge so much for them. It's not just the preparation of the document itself and the mailing. It's because they want to discourage you from seeing it. But those of valiant heart and purpose will order those annual statements, the encapsulation of the business of that company for the previous year. It's called annual reports. And you can look and you can see what their statistical policy payment percentages are. In fact, most of them are available for free online because then they don't have to print them. If you're an insured, you absolutely have the right to get on and see them if they're there. And if you're an insured in a stockholding company or a mutual insurance company, you have to get a copy of the annual report every year anyway. If you own stock in the company, they must present you with an annual report. That doesn't mean your premium payment. It means you own a share of their stock. And you can look and you can see what their experience is on claims against XYZ. They can come out by illness or injury or policy group or any number of way. Listen, that's what actuarials do. Actuaries love numbers. They create and crunch them. They create cute charts and great graphs and all that sort of stuff. Every single day you can look at them. And if it comes out that XYZ insurance company has paid 0% of their premiums on this policy plan, it's going to tell you something. Because they also tell you how many people hold that plan. And the larger the number is, the less likelihood is that they're going to get a 0% for that plan. They have to pay something. One of the most notorious things that ever happened to the insurance industry was the law that passed that said, if 80% of your premium income is not expended on direct care of insurance, you must give a premium refund. Wow. Over $12 billion went back to Americans in 1 year. There's a positive reason to have insurance, but that's not the only reason that policies were canceled. It's been the norm for insurance companies to raise policy premiums every year since Hector was a pup. And the only reason they do it is because no one said no. How can you justify increasing a premium on a policy that never pays? Oops, another problem. And all of a sudden, all kinds of insurers, no matter what kind they are, stock or mutual, started having, under the law, in order to keep their endorsements for writing insurance in the United States, they started writing checks for premium refunds. So while your policy might have been canceled, did you get a refund? If your policy is going up, did you get a refund last year? It is the intent of the insurance companies. They exist in a way that is different than for which they were originally created. You have to understand that. That's what reasoned intelligence tells you. Where once it was the idea that everybody pays a little so that when something bad happened to someone, nobody would have to take the full brunt of that tragedy. Now, they will tell you they're all about profit for their shareholders. That's a lie, by the way. That's nowhere in their commissioning statement or their incorporation statement. I don't begrudge anyone their wealth, unless, of course, it's illegally or immorally earned. I had a problem with that. They're not going to tell you that. You're going to have to go searching for that, and they expect you not to, which is why some of these folks have been in business a very long time. That's certainly the case of Countrywide. In the mortgage industry, and many, many other mortgage companies. It's that way on Wall Street, too. You know, nobody's going to come out and tell you that they created a product, which is, just say, it's a box. Okay, you got a box around you can look at and see it. That's a product. It's a financial product in a package that has no physical presence, okay? It's something designed to be bought and sold over an exchange market that is a financial instrument that someone has got somewhere, a document that is a package of parts that's called, Magnastar Virgo. And what they then do is they sell that package to other people, those who like to make money using money, those who like to make money for their own purposes, like banks and mortgage companies and high-dollar industries where they trade that kind of stuff overnight. And while they're selling it, these folks, their in-house people, their own employees, placing bets on the exchange that that product will fail. That if it comes to fruition, the parts of that project will fall apart, and therefore the value of that product, Magnus Star Virgo, will crumble. And the second it crumbles, they make money because it will never again be as high as it is right now. And they can see it happening. They can predict it's going to happen. They know when it's going to happen. They have inside intelligence that tells them it's going to happen. And they can start very slowly hedging their bets, which is what hedge fund managers do, not that it will succeed, but that it will fail. And the second it fails, they bail. And all the money that could be made has just been made. That has nothing to do with the mortgage holders who are actually a part of that package. That has nothing to do with the companies who presented parts of that package to make it a complete project. It has to do with one guy who bet that the project would fail. He made a lot of money. The people who were betting on the project to succeed lost a lot of money, and a lot of the money they lost, this guy gets. Because that's a financial transaction. There is a limited resource called money. And it's always in play. It's always in movement, one way, up or down. So it very, very, very seldom holds for any length of time these days. It used to. And you should hear some of the arguments these people have given, trying to justify the fact that they made a $200 million bonus because of their performance with this product called Magnus Star Virgo, or whatever it is. It's just, you know, it's just a name. While hundreds of thousands of other people lost their shirts. It could have been a retirement pension fund that was, you know, sold this product. It could have been a union. It could have been John Q. and Mrs. Public. It could have been a school district. It could have been another insurance company, which happens all the time. Could have been banks. Could have been mortgage companies, brokers, anything. Now, one of the things that you have to realize is that the best defense in a case like this is to ignore the obvious. Okay? If you say that the project failed, they'll come back and say, yes, but wasn't that package prettily wrapped? What, didn't you like the wrapping on that? And they'll say, well, okay, yeah, it failed, and they'll start reaching for something. If you understand the logical fallacies, if you understand the basics of rhetoric, if you understand the value of reasoned argument, they can't hold up. First of all, they're not trained in it. Secondly, they don't know how to use it correctly. They only know how to use it incorrectly. So I'll give you one more example, and I've used this before, but it goes directly to the point. So bear with me if you will. New agents in training at the FBI or at the Department of Treasury who are going to work in the Secret Service. Let's go with them because they got better uniforms. Or not. come in, and their job is to work in a unit that detects, apprehends, and prosecutes counterfeiters of currency. That's you. You're the new agent. What do you expect is going to happen to you in the next 10 weeks? How do you think you're going to be trained to notice, interdict, and prosecute counterfeiting? 99.99% of you listening to my voice today would say, boy, they're going to be busy looking at fake bills. They're going to study the context of paper and ink, and they're going to find out the exact number of swirls on a plate, and they're going to measure the colors one against the other, or the weight of the paper, the quality of the content of the paper, the type of paper, whatever, until they can see all these fakes and know every one of them by name. And I will tell you that that's not true. That's not what you're going to do. You're going to spend every available moment of every day for the next 10 weeks looking at legitimate currency. You're going to know what the truth is. You're going to know what the truth is to such a degree that the second an untruth dares to rear its ugly head, you will see it as being untrue, because you know what the truth is. Politically, that's what I would like my listeners to become. I would like them to become counterfeit agents. That's kind of a nefarious term. We need to come up with something better. Let's call it progressive citizens. Okay? Just for the use of a term we can get along with for the next 3 weeks. And the progressive citizen is a specialist in the truth. And when the makers of falsehood come out with something that is patently untrue, the second you see it, you'll recognize it for the untruth that it is. You'll respond immediately to it with sufficient fact to, if not overcome, at least overwhelm the falsehood to the point that it can no longer survive and it will suck up its own oxygen until it dies. Now, it will suck up its own oxygen until it dies. There will be, you know, this massive outpouring of the two talking points for today, and by the end of the day, that talking point will be over. If you want to spend the next 6 months arguing why it's false, go ahead. We don't care. We got tomorrow's coming up. And if it takes us one day to come up with a falsehood and it takes you 6 months to overcome it, we win. The trouble with many members of the Republican and conservative, ultra-conservative, fundamental Tea Party terrorist parties in America today are having is the speed at which their mistruths are being identified. They're not getting the six-month leg time they got on them 2 or 4 years ago. And in many cases, they're not even getting a day's worth. Why? Because there are people out there who are becoming experts in counterfeiting. And that's on both sides of the issue. There are experts being grown on how to tell a lie, and there are experts being grown on how to identify a lie. And that's the part we need to understand. You're never going to run out of lies to overcome. Not in politics. And in the war on the poor, one of the most effective tools has been the statement of the lie. You know one yourself. You know a lie that you've heard that you knew the second you heard it could not possibly be true. It raised your ire. It made you mad. You just wanted to fling a Nerf brick at the TV. You wanted to type out a witty reply on a comment. You wanted to go to Red State or to Data Coast and just give them hell. But did you present truth? See, that's the part we've had so much trouble coming up with. I don't know why. We've kind of forgotten about it. Somewhere we decided, had decided for us that truth in politics wasn't possible. That power was all that mattered, that money made the difference. Well, I've never seen truth overwhelmed by anything except a lie. I saw untold hundreds of millions of dollars spent in the last election on lies that got nothing because of one simple truth. I heard everything about this terrible president and all the bad things he had done and why there were 47 different articles of impeachment against him and all this sort of stuff. One by one they came out. One by one a simple truth was put in front of them, and one by one they died. But there are so many lies coming out at such a fast notion that we're beginning to see second generations of them, or third generations of them, or fourth generations of them. Or back to 1950, or back to 1935, or back to 1850. And we've got people who tell us that it is in our best interest to eliminate government bureaucracies, or that we should remove constitutional amendments, or that what the Constitution meant, it really didn't mean, or what the court did before was wrong. And, of course, one of my statements is, generally, if you can overturn the Voting Rights Act, surely you can overturn Buckley versus Vallejo. The question is, what's the truth? So, what they want you to know is what they want you to know. It's not automatically or necessarily the truth. It makes perfect reasonable sense to believe that any man standing for a candidate to public office would honor the truth. The fact of the matter is that doesn't happen nearly as often as it should. In fact, there are a lot of candidates for public office in this election in November 2014 who are basing their entire candidacies on either creating a lie to get them elected or to create a lie to remove a sitting member of Congress or a state legislature or election school board mayor or something. And they're going to do it with a lie. Your job, as I see it, as popular, populist, progressive citizen, is to be aware of what the truth is. If they say the truth, back them up. Support them, endorse them, encourage them. If they speak a lie, confront them. Deny them the space to let that lie grow. Overwhelm it with the truth. And we see that happening in a larger and larger scale to a greater and greater degree daily. Why do you think that 49 attempts to overturn the Affordable Care Act failed? Why do you think it is that in the Republican Party they believe that the only significant thing they can do between now and 2016 is to repeal Obamacare? If you look at that from the point of reasoned argument, there's only one side you can have. No, it's not enough. That's a hell of a sight better than what we had. And even they, those who would repeal the Affordable Care Act, admit that the only things they wouldn't touch are all the things that are working in Obamacare. And what they've told you is about death panels and overwhelming debt and all this sort of craziness that comes out of their minds that is disproven time after time after time. They cannot support their arguments. Their arguments fall, and the repeal is denied. When we come back, we're going to talk about another couple of issues that should be readily apparent to truth tellers or to counterfeit agents. And maybe they are, and maybe they aren't. You're listening to Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. We'll be back after these words and some music. Y'all hang in with us, will you? We'll be back shortly.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. There are many arguments proclaiming the evils of big government, and it always seems to come back to the same arguments made by the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists during the days of our founders, concerning the differences between a strong central government and a weak central government. The Second Continental College adopted the Articles of Confederation on November 15, 1777, and it was in place until 1789. But it was replaced by the Constitution, which advocated for a stronger central government. Why was it replaced? The Articles of Confederation maintained the principle that the national government would not hold more power than the states, that which they saw as sovereign. This satisfied the fears that many of the states had regarding a strong central power, as Britain was before the Declaration of Independence. In fact, there was no executive branch, because they feared giving one man that much power, and it was decided that the Congress would handle all the nation's affairs. However, there were many inherent weaknesses with the Articles of Confederation. The national government did not have the power to tax. Congress did not have the power to force states to obey its laws. Congress could not enforce laws. Each state could issue its own paper money. Any state could put tariffs on trade between other states or countries. There was no system of national courts. Congress could declare war and raise an army, but it could not force the states to give men or money. After the Revolutionary War, the country went into a deep post-war depression. The states were threatening war with each other, and there were armed uprisings and riots across the land. Things eventually got so bad that the country was on the verge of a civil war. This was called the critical period. Because each state was printing their own money, the value depreciated soon after the war, and many returning soldiers were paid in currency they considered to be worthless. There are stories that some soldiers wallpapered their house with the paper currency. On May 25, 1787, the Continental Congress convened in Philadelphia to decide the fate of the Articles of Confederation, and on September 17, 1787, a new constitution was approved, which had the much-needed, stronger central powers. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA Blog Talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on? Daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Sing it!
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab, or will you be a man?
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the
good old Union has come in here to dwell. Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Hello and welcome back to Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. I am the Tennessee Progressive and I'm coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia on this Sunday, April 27th, 2014. And we're discussing the beginnings of a three-part series entitled The War on the Poor, The Battle for Reason. And I'm going to respond to a chat question I got from a friend who asked, is there a distinction between facts and the truth? And as if I had paid him for the segue, thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. Yes, there are differences between facts and the truth. Now, let me give you an example that's relatively simple but causes a lot of discussion in political circles. It is a fact. I need a job. It is not true that the government is required to give me one. It is possible that our area of disagreement can come when we try to discuss at what level should the government be involved in my finding or creating for myself a job. And I believe that most people would, at least as a progressive, certainly as a change agent, would tell you that there is a moral sense that if aid can be given to someone to find a meaningful, respectful job that provides the necessary parts of living in the United States in 2014, like eat, sleep, and warm, for instance, then you go beyond that to a second level of, say, you know, education, leisure, and security, and you go any number of levels above that you want, that's where the argument and the discussion comes in. But I believe that you are astute in asking the question, is there a difference in between facts and the truth, because yes, it is a fact. I need a job. It is not true that the government has to give me a job. It could be argued that it's not even true that I have to have a job. That would be a false argument, but that's okay, because there are certain things that we expect as citizens of a nation that perhaps we should alter as regards our expectations. But there are certain things which we have determined as a nation that our government should do for us, not amongst the least of which is protect us and defend us. It's not anywhere stated. What's stated is that the Constitution must be defended. But that we as a people have taken upon ourselves a solemn obligation to look after each other, to look after each other in terms of citizenship. And if I know somebody, and I don't know they have a job, but they know I need one and I'm qualified for their job, if they come to me and say, hey, listen, I've got this job, it's available, would you like to apply for it? That's cool. That's not a government responsibility, nor is it legal, and it's not litigable. I can't take them to court because they had a job and didn't tell me about it, because that's not the way in this society being the contours and confines of the United States of America and its territories, that we do things. Now, there are those who want us to do things that way. Their opinion is that that's what should done. Maslow's, yes, eat, sleep, and warm is the basis of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There are those who try to turn that on its head. I've never found anybody who had two out of the three and felt like they were secure. I never found anybody who had a job and a house but no food who felt that they were secure, especially when the job they have doesn't provide them enough to keep a house and food. Or like, you know, say seniors who have this amazing difficulty that we don't even think about, that live on an extremely limited income, a subsistence income, who have for one reason or another secured for themselves a canine or a feline companion. And one of the most shocking things I've learned this week is that a large number of senior citizens who are on fixed limited incomes in this country are having to make a decision about whether they eat or whether their pet does. I didn't know that one of the most increasing objects in food pantries was pet food, and that there's a national push that someone has in fact donated $300 million to fund a program whereby non-kill shelters can use vouchers to provide pet food for their animals, whether they, no matter what the animal is. And it's had one of the greatest impacts on food security for senior citizens in America in the last 6 months, from a person who individually decided this was an important issue for them because of their love of pets. They named it after a pet. They went and said, you know, pets deserve to live too. And out of that comes this, you know, necessity that, wow, there's a decision that grandma doesn't have to make this week. She can feed her pet and herself. Is that a requirement of government? Is the government required to give me a job or to make sure that I'm survivable? Does the government owe me my life? No. But we as a society have said that every life matters. We have said that we the people, all of us, inclusively each and every one of us, are endowed with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life. We as a people said that. And our government is based around the notion of its truth. Therefore, it becomes what is known as a societal standard. And when those people that I hear say you are not owed anything from the government talk on you know, their platforms, whatever they may be, I immediately hear a falsehood. And that's based upon we the people, endowed with certain inalienable rights. Among these are the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Of course, one of the big arguments that was really the major holdup to more states ratifying the Constitution when it came out was the use of the term pursuit of happiness as opposed to property. And life, liberty, and property was included in many constitutions of the states, but was not included in the Constitution to the United States. And there became some problems from that we would repeat our visit to several times over as history unveiled itself. What the truth is in the matter is important. Our job here in the war on the poor, as far as the battle for reason goes for the next 3 weeks, is we're going to try to discuss how it is that reasoned argument, following some very basic laws, very basic principles of speech called rhetoric, 14 basic steps of rhetoric, and the ability to be a change agent by speaking truth to power can actually happen and kind of crumble this false sense of reason that comes at us at a daily clip from whatever source we get it from. And we get it from every source. I mean, there's nobody that's immune from this, either receiving it or doing it. You can say it was well-intended, but the net result is a negative. You can say that it wasn't well-intended and it got a negative response. You can say it was not negatively intended, but good came out of it. The difference between facts and the truth generally fall to application, and that's where people falsely say, well, that's my truth. Well, your truth is a lie. Your truth doesn't stand the test. If your opinion is based upon a false truth, what are you going to do? This is a difficult question for a lot of people, because a lot of people are not willing to let go of their beliefs. We see this every day. When someone's belief is challenged, they feel threatened. So it's not so much what you say as how you say it that makes a difference. My preferred choice and use of it is to allow people to discover the truth for themselves. And if I have to point them to the one place that says unequivocally, that what you believe, say you believe A, just because I get tired of X and Y, if what you believe can be categorized as A, we have definitively proven that A is false. You can continue to champion a mistruth or an untruth or, if you wish, a lie, and that will have consequences, which is the secret nugget to all this. Or you might want to rearrange your understanding to the point that it reflects what the truth is. People are real hard to let go of their convictions, their beliefs, their ideologies, okay? And that's part of human nature, because those things go a long way to determining who we are to ourselves and to others. And while we may know that what we say is a mistruth, we repeat it because of its impression or its perceived value to being heard by those whom we want to respect us. And that's a falsehood as well. And the truth, I don't believe in personal truth. I don't believe in general truth. I do believe in absolute truth, because anything where truth doesn't exist, that's not truth. It's like water and sugar, okay? There's no part of a glass of water that doesn't have sugar in it once you introduce sugar to water. It all becomes sweeter. Oil and vinegar doesn't mix. There's always oil and there's always vinegar. The degree to which they mix is the degree in which they are proportionately shared. But the simple fact of the matter is I believe in absolute truth. I really do. I don't believe that everything is absolutely true. Everything that is not absolutely truth, I contend, has an element of falsehood in it. Therefore, if and only if, it's false. That happens all the time. You know, it happens all the time. 10 points of this argument are sound. 2 of them blow the whole argument up. All right, eliminate the 2. Stick with a solid argument. Well, the problem with that is people can't shut up. That's why I've got 2 hours and a microphone. I got a lot of things to say. But this battle for reason is a different one. This could go to a question like, why is it that Republican women consistently vote against women's rights? Why is it that there are a large number of Americans who believe that there's no such thing as an intellectual mind south of the Mason-Dixon line? Why is it that Democrats just absolutely cling to the notion that their president can do no wrong? Why is it that we cannot agree on a fair reality for every American citizen today? What is so big now? Okay? It stunned me the first time I had to say, every 80 minutes we're losing a veteran to suicide. Can't say that anymore because it's no longer true. We're now losing 80 veterans a day to suicide. What's up with that? Now, the fact is, there are 80 veterans who are committing suicide in the United States every 24-hour period on average. That's a fact. But what's the truth? So, Bob, I thank you for your example. And I would say that the challenge is not in finding the fact. We're not finders of fact because we're not a court of law. We're individual human beings, citizens, if you will, who don't have the same requirements and stringent necessities to understand that we're losing 80 veterans a day in this country. From that derives the truth. What are you doing about it? Do you think it's a truth that they're on their own? Do you think it's a truth that the government is somehow compelled to provide every need they have? Do you think it is a truth that they should not be any different than anybody else, that if they can't find work, it's their own fault because obviously they're takers and not givers? But they should never receive things like, you know, housing assistance or education assistance or SNAP food benefit assistance or medical assistance from the VA or what part of their dilemma are you not in tune with? And what are you going to do about it? Well, you have to start with the truth. Facts can lead you to the truth, not necessarily. Sometimes, you know, there's a very old saying about statistics, after all. Statistics never lie, but liars use statistics. Actually, the truth from Mark Twain was that figures never lie, but liars figure. And, of course, it came before him. So it's a well-known fact that there is a discrete difference. If we build the truth based on fact, we'll build the truth. Your fact may not be that you can go to a Veterans Administration hospital and volunteer your time to talk to a vet who's been in hospital for 6 months and never had a single person visit them. Of course, that may not be the fact either. The question is, what are you going to do about it? Well, there's no reason why I can't go to see a vet once a week, okay? What are you doing about it? I understand that there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of vets who are homeless. What are you doing about it? Nothing. The homeless are there because they're too lazy. And if a vet becomes homeless, you just become lazy. It's not my problem. I don't have that problem. I'm busy trying to survive myself. Really? Yeah, I got a family to feed. I got things I want to do. I want to go on vacation. I want to do, yeah. I know. You know, it's really hard to move. I would advise you that it's much harder not to be able to move, whether you're a human or an animal. There's nothing that says compassion has to wear a political color, but there is something that says that it must wear a human color. And that's a fact. We're not the only species with the ability to provide compassion to their own kind. I mean, there's no shortage of examples of species who have shown compassion to each other. Canines and felines do it. Baboons do it. Dolphins do it. Apes do it. Birds do it. Bees do it. And there are species that show compassion to others not of their species. Humans do it. Dolphins do it. Whales do it. Birds do it. Chickens do it. Pigs do it. But we alone are the ones with reason. We alone are the ones who really understand to a depth as to why something is a good thing to do, a true thing to do, a fact versus a fiction or a fallacy, and how we can build a reality based upon the facts of truth. And when somebody comes out and says to you something, there's nothing automatically bad about being skeptical about it. Huh, I never heard that before. I think I'll look into that. Cool. Way to go. I think you ought to. I think you should. Matter of fact, I think you must. There's nothing I say on this air that I'm not willing to have challenged. You don't believe what I'm saying? Or even if you do, check it out. Find out whether what I'm telling you is a fact or the truth. Or is it my version? Because my version can in fact grow from fact and truth into a reality for me that I want to share with others. This is the fact. This is the truth as I understand it. I believe you should understand it this way too. If I'm going to run for political office, there's several of those that I need to get out. But it fundamentally starts with the war on poverty. Okay, what is it that makes reason an enemy of poverty? Or is reason a friend of poverty? Or the lack of it? And there's a lot of ways we could go with that, but it's a question we'll be dealing with for this week and the next 2 weeks. So you're invited to come and visit with us and to share with us your version, your truth, your facts. You know, in 1986, X number of people died who did not have insurance, that had they had insurance, would have been able to live. You can find it out. It's on the internet. Google it. Of course, Google hates hearing that term used as anything other than a noun, but hey, they did it to themselves, just like Kleenex did. Yes, there's this distinct difference between the truth and facts. Facts can lead you down a rabbit hole. You have to be the arbiter of fact. You know, courts of conviction, the first courts, the local courts, most of the state courts are determined to be, by law, finders of fact, and everybody else is an appealer, an appellate court, to test whether or not the facts have been found. But our jobs as individual citizens deals with what we see in front of us. That's called reality. And when we can't see reality, we have been deluded. And when we are deluded, we are delusional. And we will begin to believe a lie as if it were the truth, as if it were a fact. You can take a fact and say X equals Y and have three people arguing about it for years. Listen, I've been in several professions where that's true. Or they'll say, yeah, okay, I'll give you X, but what about Y? Well, we're talking about X. What about X? We'll come to Y. Take your time. Keep your pants on. Well, yeah, he said something that may sound racist, but what about the facts? What about the facts? He's a racist. Well, he may have presented his facts in an unkindly way, but that doesn't make him a racist. Well, actually, you know what? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Sorry. You can't get around that. Anyone who would talk to an entire species in the singular possessive as if somehow he knew everything about them that needed to be known and was certainly worthy of casting his factual opinion on them and trying to use a false allegory to do it, not to mention breaking rules of, among other things, rhetoric and logic. That doesn't fly. Now, interestingly enough, there were enough people in Clive and Bundy's corner who had been touting him as being the frontier patriot who have run away from him with blinding speed because the new addition of information that they didn't have before have led us to understand that there is a nefarious secondary purpose to what Mr. Bundy is doing, and he's not talking about the fact that he has owed the federal government money for decades that he has simply refused to pay. That in order to get access to the land to graze his cattle, he had to sign an agreement that he would pay fees, at which he did not sign, which means that every single blade of grass his cattle ate, he stole. And he stole it from the American people because these are publicly protected federal lands. Now, his friend down the way, you know, he paid his fees. He's bitching about his fees increasing, tripling, in fact. Guess what? He's the man with the right to bitch. Mr. Bundy has no such position. He's a deadbeat. He's a bum. He's a millionaire bum, but he's a bum. Why did it take him so long? I don't know. Maybe they were trying to get him to do eventually the right thing. So they came to see some of his cattle. Boy, oh boy, didn't that just sound like, oh, big, yeah, hello, come in. What's the truth? What are the facts? Mr. Bundy does not want you to know the facts. Not even in his cast-off comments about other people. Because if you know those facts, you're in trouble. And the reason you're in trouble is because Mr. Bundy has been found out. And if you don't believe it, listen to what Sean Hannity had to say about him last week, and then listen to what Sean Hannity is saying about him today. Or anybody else for that matter. There is a truth to be known. There are those who do not want you to know the truth because it does not serve their better purposes. Now, where do you stand on that? If somebody looks you in the face, tells you a lie, expects you to believe it, and doesn't even care if you do, what does that say about you? What does that say about their view of you, and how do you defend that? I told you that speaking truth to power is when things change. If you use that as your guidepost, if you use that as your watchword, and you become a counterfeit agent, which means that you check out to see, you're always aware of the truth so that when something false reveals itself, you're the agent to change it. That's what that means. You can do it. It's not hard. Let's take a call real quick from area code 813. Hello, Steve. You're on the air. Welcome to Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style.
Thank you very much. To start out with, let me tell you, I'm a conservative. I vote Republican.
Okay. Good.
I am very impressed with some of your rhetoric today. I think you're speaking directly to a lot of the things that I try to speak to, which is to try to try to not sell other people out, try to respect other people's values and not assign to them whatever terrible positions we care to, but try to seek the truth.
Yeah.
You're speaking quite a bit about the truth, and obviously we all know about the Bundy situation, and I guess I'm looking for a point of clarification from you.
Okay.
I listened to all of his comments, and I can't say in good faith that I think he's a racist. I've heard racist comments, and I think I know what racism is when I see it. I don't think that was it, and that's all of the comments he made. And I think if you listen to all the contents he made, you can say, well, he's an old man, he's talking from a certain perspective, you can say all kinds of things about him. And if you want to, at the end of the day, if you look at all that and you say he's a racist, okay, that's fine. So I guess my question is, if a racist is telling the truth, does that negate the truth he's telling?
No.
Okay, I agree.
The truth has the ability to stand on its own. I think that there are a couple of things about Mr. Bundy that you and I might disagree on. One of them being, I think he is fundamentally a racist. Okay? I think that, unfortunately, the revelation of that fact came long before what could potentially have been a very significant discussion.
Why is that? What, if I might ask, from his comments make you think that it's a racist? And maybe we're getting caught up, or maybe I'm not, we have to decide exactly what we term racist. Bigoted, to me, is different than racist. Racist is something different than a bigot. I think he's a bigot. Okay,
no.
But I don't think he's necessarily... I'm curious, what did he say that you think is racist? And I'm not challenging you on it. I'm just saying, help me understand it, please.
I understand it. Historically, there have been, over the course of the arc of our history, given from the 1750s through the 1950s, a series of tales, if you will, that align people with certain ideologies, okay? It can be the way they're spoken. Mr. Bundy alleges several different ideologies. I think that Mr. Bundy is a racist because, among other things, he sees all African Americans, in his term, as Negro. What that means is he has castigated an entire species of people to a singular noun.
Like the National Negro College Fund?
No, like Negro. Is it better for the Negro to, all of them, there's no distinction of person, there's no distinction of class, there's no distinction of any separation at all. It is, as a group, Negro. That is a decidedly racist view from history, the Negro. I think that Mr. Bundy, and what I would much rather speak about, which is why I find it a little bit confusing, because I think Mr. Bundy had some questions that deserved an answer, but I don't think he would accept the answer from those most qualified to give it, which is the second reason I consider him to be a racist. If he wants to know whether or not it is better for a Negro to stay on the farm picking cotton, therefore giving them something to do, a very bad analogy. Would you agree with that?
I think that could be a poor analogy, but I understand exactly what he's coming from in making that analogy. And we can criticize him for how he said it, but I think he's making a reasonable argument that's been made by many reasonable people of color. He did not present it in the best way.
No, and what happened was he derailed his own possibility by doing it. But the simple fact of the matter is there are not too many Negroes I know who long to return to slavehood on a plantation picking cotton.
I would agree. I know many who say.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, please go ahead.
I think that Mr. Bundy's opinions get in the way of the facts a lot. If he's trying to say, are Black Americans, African Americans, better off today than they were in 1850, his answer to that, according to Mr. Bundy, would be no. And the reason he would say that is because of the view he has about dependence upon the United States federal government for eat, sleep, and warm. We could stop right there. And in fact, I must, because I'm almost out of time. But what I think we could talk about is the comparison between Mr. Bundy's worldview and mine. And to say that the reason African Americans are on welfare is because of their desire or disincentive to work, I would tell Mr. Bundy to show me one, because I haven't met any. And I've met a lot of folks in my lifetime. I have seen people who abuse the system. Okay? I lived in a place where it was normal practice to abuse the system. First of all, I never abused the system. And in the second place, of all the people where I lived that were abusing the system, not a single one of them were African American. And that was, I don't know, 90 people in one building. So I would say that 0 out of 90 versus 90 out of 90 could potentially tell us something that mattered. Now, if those people are abusing the system and they're on welfare or they're receiving benefits that they may not be legally entitled to because they've learned how to game the system, I would be in favor of someone, I don't know who, I read it in a book once, that would call the state agency required and have every one of them investigated, with over 70 of those people losing said benefits, because that's what a citizen would do. It's not a matter of being a Republican or a conservative. You know, if the government is available to help those who need it, and there are those who can't get help who need it because of those who don't need it, then we need to deal with those who don't need it. And I'm with Mr. Bundy on that. I'm with everybody who's ever said that. I don't believe that government is around for us to abuse to our own will. But I do believe that we need the federal government, because the purpose of government is to do for us collectively what we cannot do for ourselves. We disagree, maybe.
I would agree completely with everything you just said, and I'll even give over my thoughts on Bundy, and I'll even concede your points on that, and I would agree with them on some level. I think the important thing for me to understand, or the thing that I wanted to hear from you, and this is my first time hearing your show, but I'm over the past couple of weeks been gotten more listening to the Coffee Party, and for me there's a huge disconnect between the rhetoric that I hear on the air and then the actions that I see on the ground, as it were. So the important thing to me is that you can understand possibly his concern, and it seems to me like you can possibly look beyond his ignorance and see what he's talking about. I agree completely that we need a federal government. I agree completely that we need to take care of the least among us. I think that there are things that you had said that we can't do ourselves. I think those are pretty small. I think those are probably listed in the enumerated powers of the Constitution. I think everything else, if we're going to call ourselves Americans, and we're going to say that in what we do in engaging other Americans is seeking domestic tranquility and is seeking a more perfect union, if we do all those things, then we need to do those outside of the government. And that falls on us to be responsible, and that we're living up to the values that are put forward in the Declaration of Independence, the reason we have this country. And so that means, in my mind, there are things that the government should do, and there are things that there should not, and those things that the government should not do, we need to work twice as hard as the people who are trying to keep us divided to find the common ground and to try to find solutions, be respectful from each other. You use the term truth a lot. To me, the term truth is very much subjective. We all have our own truth, but I think as long as we're trying to find the other person and understand what they see as their truth, and try to represent ours truly, then this country has a chance. I am very happy to have found your voice here on the Coffee Party, reading your description. It sounds like you're new here. I think you add a lot to it, and I hope that I will continue to see some of the values and some of the ideas that you have put forward here today further explored and shown in the rest of the Tea Party and in the various avenues that they're getting their message out. Thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate it. I'm sorry?
You mean the Coffee Party?
What did I say?
Tea Party.
In a lot of times I call them Coffee Talk, which I don't mean to do either, but it's Saturday Night Live's, Michael Myers.
Yeah.
So Coffee Party, I apologize. I've heard a lot of good people on there.
There are some good people on there. I want to thank you for your call today, and
thank you.
I really appreciate your voice, and you're welcome back anytime, Steve.
Thank you very much. I will be around.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye for now. Stephen, I hope you're still listening, because there was something I wanted to say to you. Those who would divide us, the issues that are on the fringes, those who have this or nothing else, this or all, the things that divide us. What I would really love and find a lot of hope for my country in, is if we could find those things upon which we agree to do for each other, the things that government shouldn't do, the things that government can't do. There are things the government can do and should do that we would disagree upon. I have no doubt about that. But I agree with you that there are many things that if we as citizens would simply do our due diligence to our oath as citizens, I'm fully convinced that a very large number of presently necessary governmental operations would no longer be required. And if we could simply find three things, just three, that we can do, okay, as a nation, not as a party, not to be the beneficiary of attaboys and offshoots, but to simply say as Americans we deem these to be irreconcilable necessity, then we attack those things. And maybe we do it 55% vanilla, 20% chocolate, 20% strawberry, maybe throw in a lime or two, I don't know, to the table as to who can do a good thing. And there's not a limitation as to who can do a good thing for a good reason. The war on poverty is all about defying reason. Okay? When there are those who say that we can keep trillions of dollars of corporate welfare, which I'd love to hear some folks talk about, but we have to take 90 million meals off the plate for those who can't feed themselves. To me, from my perspective, from my life experience, that's imbalanced. That doesn't make sense to me. If we can take from those who have generated more corporate profit in the last quarter than in their history, and say, congratulations on your success, I'm glad to see you don't need a government handout, we're going to take that money and we're going to pay half of it into the deficit, and we're going to take the other half and we're going to create jobs, or we're going to create opportunities, we're going to solve needs, we're going to bring home the military, we're going to do this or do that. We're going to do things that make the life of every American citizen better, regardless of their station, standing, or orientation, or race. I'd be all for it. You know, an infrastructure bank could be built overnight by that, where we say it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what party you represent. If you've got a bridge falling down, give us a call. I'd love to see some of that. If we come up with three of those things, we'd be probably back in toward reaching headlong toward the 1900s. I'd love to see that. Thank you for your call, Stephen. Thank you for being here, Bob. Thanks to all our guests and our chatters. I appreciate it. It's been wonderful. And I will give you, because you're here, I will try to give you at least, yeah, I can do that, a blog link to the new blog that is mine. It's not the parties, it's not the shows, it's mine. And this comes about because a lot of people have said, you talk about other people's comments or opinions, what do you believe? And I decide as hard as I can to leave that off this air, but I did want to have a place for it, so there it is. You can mark it, use it later, print it out, point it to your friends, neighbors, and loved ones. And it's a part of who I am, the Tennessee Progressive. And it tells you about how it is that I come to some beliefs about some things. It's not going to talk a lot about the show. It's going to talk about a conversation you and I can have as individual citizens over particular issues that matter most to us. And it gives me an outlet so that I don't get crazy on the air, and allows me to honor the civility pledge, which is also existent on my blog. I try to be civil. So it's an ongoing work. You're invited to participate in it. And that's my payoff. The show will be replayed on Tuesday evening beginning at midnight Eastern time over at NetRich Radio, which you can reach by this link. And why some of them come in as links and why they don't, I don't know. But there's one for you. Let's try that again and see if it works on a blog. See if that's the issue. Evidently it is. Those three W's are important. Okay. So thank you for having the time to be with us today. Remember that the next two shows are going to deal with the battle for reason in the war on the poor. That will be our fifth battlefield we discuss. If you have any questions, let us know. Listen to the Coffee Party. You can see the schedule at the Coffee Party site. It's coffeepartyusa.com, and you can find our radio show there, blogs, issues, press kits, the whole deal. So on behalf of the Coffee Party USA, Networks Radio, and Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, this is the Tennessee Progressive coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River. Thanks for being with us. It was nice having you on the porch. Y'all come back now, you hear? Bye-bye for now.